and taking the contact.
Well, LeBron went up strong that time inside. Kyrie Irving with the floater on the baseline knocks it down. What a great time by LeBron James to Richard Jefferson.
Beautiful cut. Beautiful backdoor cut.
Jumper for three. Yes.
What a great move.
He put Westbrook in the blender. And got the bucket.
Now that was a great move.
Jefferson on the backdoor slam.
Now that was eye contact. As soon as LeBron turned his back to the basket, Jefferson on that left side of the floor, backdoor. That was beautiful eye contact.
Kyrie Irving knocks down the 15-foot jump shot.
So I play good basketball. Tonight we did that. And started with the defensive end. You know, early on, we couldn't make many shots, but we were still defending. If we do that, we'll give ourselves a good chance to win every night. So I play good basketball. I don't have any. It's no hope for me. Just play ball. Play ball the right way and live with the results.
You know, guarding that guy is a total team effort, but it starts initially when the ball's being picked up, and I think Sean did a great job of, you know, sending him to the screen every time, as well as T-Top being ready to, you know, drop and being our defense. And then our weak side was very communicative, and we did what we were supposed to. That we've had some, you know, some practice time, you know, to correct the things that we've been lacking over the last few games, understanding that teams are coming in and, you know, giving us their all. And for us, we got to be even more sharp, especially in the defensive end. And we're getting stops and we're communicating. We're a hard team to beat. Offense, you know, won't look pretty every single night, but when you got high-level players on this team ready to knock down shots, you know, we could worry about that. But it starts on the defensive end, and that's where, you know, we'll make our mark.
When you go from one spot from home to another, to the Super Bowl site, now you have to readjust. You have to find a meeting room. If you like to watch film individually by yourself, that's over with. Now you're watching it as a group. You have to go through the scheduling process, the media requests that you have. And I think that's the number one issue that I had when I was transitioning, was going from Valley Ranch in Dallas to wherever it was, either Atlanta or California or whatnot. It's getting there and then having to make sure everything's okay and getting comfortable in my own skin as far as watching film and spending time with family or whatnot.
The thing about being a first-time quarterback in the Super Bowl, no matter what you may tell everyone and how you may look or come across during the week, the pressure's on your shoulders because you know what class or what level you will be in if you do win this game.
We've accomplished a lot, but we still got one more to go. It's going to be tough. It's going to be the toughest one we've had all year, but we're excited about the opportunity. So as Coach tells us, put all that crap that you got to deal with in the drawer. Put it all away for one more week, because we need you guys at your best, because we need to be at our best.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I'm going to have to disagree with the man who could be, might be, may be the GOAT, the greatest of all time when it comes to quarterbacks. I might have to disagree with him here. I don't want you to put all that stuff away for one more week. It is Super Bowl week. We need you to break all of that stuff out. Be loud. Be obnoxious. Be proud. Talk about what motivates you. Talk about what revenge would be like if you want to take it on Roger Goodell. What it would be like to have him hand you the Lombardi Trophy as the Super Bowl champion. Don't be putting all that away in a drawer, Tom Brady. Bring it out. This is Super Bowl week, and that is exactly what we have to talk about. Did you hear Tom Brady? Tom Brady said that what would it mean if Roger Goodell had to hand the Super Bowl trophy over to you?
With this year, any extra motivation to have that scene, or something you haven't even, you know, the Commissioner Goodell handing it to Mr. Kraft and Coach Belichick and you, or is that not even a thought at the moment?
Well, it would be a great, you know, that would mean we won the game. So that's all I really care about, is us, you know, finishing this thing off. And, you know, I think we've had a great season. You know, the team's really played well, like I said, under a lot of different circumstances. And, you know, hopefully we're in that position. It's going to take a big effort. It's going to take, you know, a great football game by our team. So, you know, I'm excited for our opportunity. You know, hopefully we can make the most of it. We're at this point now where we got to capitalize. You only get these opportunities so often. And hopefully, like I said, it comes down to this one last game where we got to be at our best. And, you know, it's for all the marbles.
You know, sometimes I want a guy to stop being so perfectly politically correct. And it's so weird. I got to tell you, I come on this program every day, and what do we live for? Well, I shouldn't say live for. We live for the games. We live for championships. We live for history being made. We live for outstanding performances that we can revel in if they're for our teams, or that we can be jealous of if it's for somebody else's team. We live for that in the world of sports, right? But one of the things in sports media and in sports talk radio we love is the outrageous soundbite. You know, the controversial soundbite, the, you know, the diva kind of soundbites. You live for those kinds of things just because they're great fodder to talk about and to discuss and debate about. But yet other times, and I'm being 100% honest with you, what do I say about diva people, diva players, diva receivers, talking junk? What do we say? Come on, have a little bit of class, act like you've been there before. You don't have to be that way all the time. Why so obnoxious? Be professional, right? And it's weird because there's no satisfying us sometimes as fans, as sports talk hosts or media members or columnists. Sometimes it's like, come on, Tom, man, open up. Say for real. Say what you really want. We get the professionalism we ask for, and then we're like, no. Chris Berman asked Tom Brady what it would mean for Roger Goodell to hand him the trophy. Now, for anybody else, that question would be, well, it means we won. He doesn't give the trophy to the team that loses. They only give it to the team that wins, right? Well, yeah, of course. But you know as well as I know, that's not what he meant. Tom Brady, Chris Berman was asking you, what would it mean after you served the first four games of this season as on the suspended list because of the deflate gate thing from 2 years ago, where they were essentially saying that you cheated. And even though this thing was all over, Roger Goodell wouldn't let it die. Even after a judgment went in your favor, he wouldn't let it die until you served some kind of punishment for quote-unquote cheating. You have to tell us if that isn't at least a little bit more of a motivating factor for you to come out there and play the way you did this year. And in 12 games instead of the regular 16. And in 12 games, throw 28 touchdowns, just two interceptions, play like the MVP, getting back now to a, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th Super Bowl. That don't tell us this doesn't mean something a little bit more to you. And that if Roger Goodell, who went out of his way to embarrass you, the league's marquee player and one of the marquee stars of all time, let alone your time, that he went out of his way to embarrass you and suspend you and to suggest that maybe you weren't as great as you were because the ball had less air in it, so therefore it was easier for you. Any of that nonsense, you're telling me that it wouldn't mean more to you? Well, it would just mean that we won the game. He has to give me the trophy. No. Come on, Tommy. Give us a little bit more something to chew on. You know, Tom Brady, I think, has been around Bill Belichick way too long. Because that is exactly how Bill Belichick handles things. That's exactly what he would say. I can already hear that question being answered. Bill, what would it mean for Roger Goodell after all of the fighting with the Patriots organization, the docking the owner of $1 million, the stripping the franchise of draft picks, the suspension of your quarterback Tom Brady for four games? After all of that, Bill, what would it mean if he then has to turn around and hand you the Lombardi trophy? You can already hear Bill, can't you? Well, it would mean we won the game. He'd mumble it, probably worse than I just did. He would mumble, it would mean we won the game, and it would feel very good, and that would be the end of it. Tom Brady is Bill Belichick, for crying out loud. It's like it's his father. Belichick is Brady's father. I mean, honestly, they pretty much mirror one another in terms of their low-key, and I don't think it's an accident. Tom Brady showed up in New England, obviously, as a fresh-faced 22-year-old kid. So he was learning and taking his cues on how to handle himself and how to handle success from Bill Belichick. Make no mistake about that. And now it even sounds like it. In that little interview with Chris Berman about what it would mean to have Roger Goodell hand that trophy over.
Listen, this year, any extra motivation to have that scene or something you haven't even, you know, the Commissioner Goodell handing it to Mr. Kraft and Coach Belichick and you, or is that not even a thought at the moment?
Well, it would be a great, that would mean we won the game. So that's all I really care about is us, you know, finishing this thing off. And, you know, I think we've had a great season. The team's really played well, like I said, under a lot of different circumstances. And, you know, hopefully we're in that position. It's going to take a big effort. It's going to take, you know, a great football game by our team. So, you know, I'm excited for our opportunity. You know, hopefully we can make the most of it. We're at this point now where we got to capitalize. You only get these opportunities so often, and hopefully, like I said, it comes down to this one last game where we got to be at our best, and you know, it's for all the marbles.
I just wanted to hear him say that one more time, the part about how you only get to this opportunity so often. Well, no, except when you're you 7 times. 7 times to the Super Bowl. I mean, that just doesn't happen. You know, I mean, you think of guys with 5 champions. Isn't Charles Haley the only guy with like 5 championships, I think? You know, Tom Brady, and that's just, you know, being a contributing defensive end. Not that he wasn't a great one, obviously. But Tom Brady has a chance to win his 5th Super Bowl as a quarterback, and to be now in his 7th as a quarterback. And he and Belichick, you know, with the pairing there, the match made in heaven. Unless you hate the Patriots like most of us do, and then it's a match made in hell, forged in the bonds or in the fires of hell. But they really, really are, you know, it is something special to see them there for a 7th time. I will be rooting loudly and boisterously for Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, if you will, and the Atlanta Falcons. I don't need to see Tom Brady get another one. I don't need Bill Belichick to get another one. I don't like the Patriots. I don't like the Patriots culture, but I will tell you this. I respect it. I respect the Patriot way. I respect that low-key attitude. I respect that we're not going to hot dog our way through this. I mean, when's the last time you saw a New England Patriot act like a diva like Odell Beckham Jr. or Antonio Brown? When's the last time any Patriot embarrassed the franchise, embarrassed the Patriot way, if you will? When is the last time? And I'll be honest, I don't think there is an answer. In the Belichick era, I just don't know that there is a time when somebody has, you know, done something that embarrassing and then kept his job. And everybody knows it. When was Randy Moss at his best behavior in his long-storied Hall of Fame illustrious career? When was he at his best behavior? In Minnesota? No, absolutely not. It was when he was with New England. He towed the company line. He said what he was told to say. He didn't say what he was not supposed to say. It's just the way they run it, and they somehow get everybody to buy into it. And maybe it's because people, excuse me, when they get to go to New England, they know that there's a very, very good chance that there's a ring at the end of this rainbow for them if they just do what they're told. And so I respect the hell out of the Patriot way. I respect that culture of theirs. I respect that that professionalism attitude, that we're in the business of winning. We're in the business of taking guys who are not very good and making them better than they ever were before. We're in the business of championships. Now, do they take it far? And have they sometimes been caught in cheating scandals? Yes, they have. You know, the Spygate routine, I completely dismissed the Fleetgate. But the Spygate stuff, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things that you can look at about the Patriots and say dislike, and I dislike a lot of them, but I just respect them. And I'll be rooting for the Atlanta Falcons to defeat them coming up on Sunday in Super Bowl 51. So a lot of Super Bowl talk to get into today. You also heard a lot in our montage at the top of the show about the Cavaliers. The highlights there is LeBron James and Kyrie Irving put together one of the more complete games they have had in probably a month in taking apart Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder, 107-91. You also heard a little bit. Oh, no, we didn't even get anything about the Pistons in there. And you know what? There's a good reason for that in there, Jim Cushlin.
Yeah, pretty much. There was another loss over the weekend to a not very good Miami team, who's going through all their little issues right now, where winning basketball games for them. And what a stark contrast to just where they were 3-4 years ago, by the way. Winning games for the Miami Heat is actually a bad thing.
They're making a bit of a push now, to be honest with you. You know, and I'm not going to try. I'm not saying this to defend the Pistons in any way. I mean, you're right. They've lost 2 in a row now after winning 3 in a row, and you know, just the inconsistency continues to be a problem for them. But just to point it out, the Heat are playing a little bit better. They're beating some teams. They're getting some wins. I mean, power ranking wise, if you will, they're higher than than the Pistons by a lot. Right now, what are they? They're 18-30. They have climbed up in the ESPN power ranking all the way to 15. The Pistons, I think right now, are sitting around 23 in the power rankings. And not that that's the be-all, end-all deciding factor, but this is just NBA analysts. And the Heat are certainly on the upswing as opposed to the Pistons, who have been on a downswing. They won three in a row, but couldn't take advantage of that, obviously, now, and have lost two in a row as well. So the Heat are starting to turn it around a little bit. They're starting to get some wins. And, again, when you're 15, you are literally right at the bottom of the top, if you will, the top half of the 30 NBA teams.
Yeah, about the only thing for the Pistons' point of view, even with that loss, that you could still look at if you're a Pistons fan, is the last two seeds in the East, and I think it's going to play out like this the rest of the way. For what it's worth, they're still only a game and a half out of that spot, for what it's worth. And the big thing is they started out okay when Reggie Jackson wasn't there. They played overall poorly, really, since the time he came back in the beginning of December. And it feels to me like they've leveled off. Like they haven't gone on any kind of run to negate some of
that. No, nothing extended.
Exactly. As you just mentioned, they won three in a row, but now they've lost two in a row. So they've been pretty much keeping their head above water ever since their really bad stretch. I think they're out of the bad stretch, but you wonder if a run, a 5 out of 7, for example, or something like that, is on its way. And I'm just not sure how to answer that. So the best news I can give for Pistons is, despite everything, you're only a game and a half out of a playoff spot.
That's very true. I do not see a run like that in their immediate future, to be honest with you. I really don't. And there's some time, obviously, before All-Star weekend, about 3 weeks or so. But I don't see it happening anytime soon. There's going to have to be some kind of sea change, the way there actually has been for the aforementioned Heat. Well, I said a second ago they've managed to win a few games in a row here and to kind of climb up.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was this many. Did you know that last night's win of the Pistons was their 7th consecutive victory? After, by the way, how about this? How about this for a very Pistons-like kind of run? They had lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row before snapping that skid and beating the Kings. Then they lost 4 more in a row, so that's what? That's 10 out of 11 that they had lost prior to going on this now 6-game winning streak. And this is a little bit more extended than the 3 that the Pistons had we talked about. They beat the Rockets, the Mavericks, the Bucks, the Warriors. And how about that? These are all crappy teams.
Yep.
They beat the Rockets, the Mavericks, crappy, the Bucks, the Warriors, the Nets, crappy, the Bulls, not crappy, and then the Pistons, who are kind of, middling around, I guess, and, considering their ranking and the power rankings, I guess they would be called crappy. But anyway,
I think
the Heat is actually going on one of those little extended runs that I think Pistons fans desperately would love to see.
For the Heat, it just shows how bad their stretch had been before that, because to win 6 in a row, or seven. Whatever it is, 7, sorry, yes, to win 7 in a row brings them up now to 18-30, and they're still only better than the Nets and now tied with the Sixers.
Right.
So it shows you how far down they really were just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, the standings are clearly not a good thing for them to look at. But again, power ranking wise, it says something to me.
Yeah.
They have 30 losses. The Pistons have 26 losses. They're 18-30. The Pistons are 21-26, and yet the Pistons are, 8 spots behind them in the power rankings, at least according to ESPN. And again, I'm not saying they're the be-all, end-all answer to what's right and what's wrong, but the analysts there are doing what they do and analyzing and breaking things down, and certainly I think last night was an example of that.
Now here's something relating to, I guess, power rankings and standings. This team, by the way, will play the Pistons tonight, incidentally. Do you make anything of the fact that if you look at the standings for the first time all year, the East does not go Cleveland 1, Toronto 2, Boston's now in the 2 spot?
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me, and it would not surprise me if Boston finishes in the 2 spot. They have been carried to new heights by Isaiah Thomas, primarily by Isaiah Thomas, and it still sounds weird to say that, especially talking to a Pistons audience or a lot of people who know the original Zeke. But Isaiah Thomas is really, really lifting Boston to new heights, and it would not surprise me if they make a deal before the deadline comes, and they add a real second scorer. They've got some reasonable parts that they could move depending on the right deal. But if they added a supplement to Isaiah Thomas, another scoring threat, that's a team that would not be an easy out, even for the Cavaliers. And I guess I'm saying that on the you know, back end of this terrible run, and I know they had a real good game last night, but this terrible run of basketball that they had been in, they had lost, what, 6 of 8?
Yep.
So I'm looking at them at their worst when I say maybe the Celtics wouldn't be an easy out for them. Maybe the Cavaliers at their best would roll a team like the Celtics, and that's probably true. But they haven't been at their best. So just looking at everything right now, yeah, the Celtics look like a very, very solid number two team. No disrespect to Toronto, but I think Boston can actually continue that.
I think they can, too. And it'll be still fascinating to see what Danny Ainge does with all those various assets that he does have to make deals with over the course of the next couple months. And incidentally, Bob, that's why during all the drama that we've been talking about for at least the better part of a week when related to the Cleveland Cavaliers, this is why me personally, I haven't really been that worried about it, because it's coincided with the exact moment that the Toronto Raptors, who had been the number two all this time, they had been struggling mightily as well at this exact same time. So there, despite the Cavs' issues, and we know, Bob, there have been plenty over the last 2 weeks, it really hasn't made a single dent, really, in the standings. Even with Boston now at number two, it's still in a 3.5-game separation for the Cavs. They really haven't lost any ground, despite unquestionably playing their worst stretch of basketball in the year.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And again, it just underscores, once again, how weak the East is overall.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you shouldn't be able to lose 6 out of 8 and not even be pushed for, you know, the top spot in your conference.
Right.
If you lose 6 out of 8 in the Western Conference, chances are you got teams leapfrogging you quickly.
Sure.
Because they're just stronger. It's deeper. It's a little bit more competitive, a little bit more challenging, whatever it is that you want to call it. So for me,
quite frankly, the West only really goes to garbage once you get past the Grizzlies at 7th. Yeah. Nuggets right now occupy the 8th. They're 4 games below 500. The 8 in the East is only 2.
Okay.
But I agree with you. From each conference's 1 through 7, for example, the East is still the weaker conference.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. No, because, you know, I mean, garbage is garbage.
Right.
Garbage at the bottom of each conference is whatever it is.
Right.
And it sounds bad to say, but right now the Pistons would be part of the garbage collection.
Sorry.
You know, as far as the bottom of the conference goes. But to me, I'm just looking at playoffs. I'm looking at the top 7-8 teams in each league, or each conference, I should say. And that's how I kind of gauge things. How do you stack up against those? And obviously, it's much, much weaker in the Eastern Conference as far as that goes. You know, the Cavaliers are maybe one of the top 2 or 3 best teams in the league. They continue to hold down the third spot in that power ranking I referenced,
right,
obviously. But
that's fine. I'd put them about there, too, with their recent stretch.
Exactly, but you know, the real thing you look at is where are the top teams in the West, and there are so many more teams ranked so much higher. If you look at that, than the rest of the Eastern Conference. So, all right, we're going to talk more about that. Tristan Thompson, by the way, is in the news, and if you're wondering why, Tristan Thompson is not buying the notion that he has not been earning his money. He made sure to tell ESPN of his 5-year, $82 million contract that he signed in 2015 that he is earning his money. This apparently is in response to LeBron James questioning the Cavaliers' commitment to winning last week and spending last week. And the fact that LeBron James is the one who urged the Cavaliers to pay Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith, and that maybe the roster is still not good enough. Tristan Thompson is responding saying, hey, it's not like I'm earning the money that I got, or not like that I'm not earning the money that I got. LeBron is not my agent, he said. I'm doing what I need to be doing. Is there going to be more pushback from the teammates that are being publicly smacked around by LeBron James? We saw something similar happen in Chicago last week. We talked about Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, and then eventually Rajon Rondo. Will there be pushback by the likes of Tristan Thompson and others if LeBron James continues to publicly question their earnings and whether or not they're earning their salaries? We'll get into that as we continue as well. A lot of stuff to talk about. Super Bowl week is here. A lot of NBA discussion to have. And, oh, by the way, what Hall of Fame baseball player is not happy with his 2 new colleagues in the hall? I'll tell you who it is, and we'll tell you what he said as we continue as well, right here on ESPN 106.5
The Ticket. 106.5 The Ticket. Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
So last week we spent a little bit of time, as we continue at 3:40 this afternoon right here on The Ticket, talking about LeBron James calling out his his teammates the way that he did. He essentially said that these guys aren't good enough. We need better players. First, he said they weren't giving enough effort. That's a bad thing in and of itself. There wasn't enough effort. This is after the loss, I want to say, to the Pelicans last week without Anthony Davis. Problem is that there's not enough effort. Later in the same conversation, he was asked about Kyrie going off for 49, and he essentially told the media, well, he had to. He has to do that because what other choice is there? In other words, we don't have enough other good players to get points and get buckets and do good things, so he's got to do that. And he said Kyrie did his thing. He said, I did my thing, tried to get my other guys involved, but you know what? You know, that's what we have to do. And then he went into the specifics, saying that he hopes the organization is not satisfied and that we are not as good as we were last year from a talent perspective. And I took that, and I talked about it a great deal last week. And I took that as I don't like my teammates very well because I don't have Matthew Dellavedova and Timothy Mozgov anymore, Timofey Mozgov to be more accurate. I don't like my teammates as much. I don't think the talent level is good. I don't think J.R. Smith not being here certainly isn't a help. But, you know, between Shump and Tristan and Channing Frye, and, you know, everybody, you know, Felder and Liggins, all these guys, they're just not as good as they need to be. I said, you know, that's going to cause some friction. What do you do when you rip your guys publicly and then you see them in the locker room before the next game or at the next practice? You know, what do? Do you apologize? Do you say, hey, guys, I didn't really mean you're not that good, but we do have another roster spot and we need to add another playmaker, blah, blah, blah. How do you handle that? And sooner or later, that kind of thing is gonna boil over. And indeed, it has. Tristan Thompson isn't being rude. He isn't being combative about it. But he was speaking with Dave McMenamin of ESPN after the Cavaliers win against the Nets, and he was talking about how they got to build momentum on the off the victory they had then. Then he started to, or I'm sorry. Then after last night, he had a monster game. By the way, monster game. Against Oklahoma City, as did Kyrie Irving and LeBron James as well. But he started talking a little bit more about himself and about his money and about how he has earned his money. First, let me give you the clip of Tristan Thompson with Dave McMenamin. We'll talk about that, and then we'll get into the money aspect. And for some reason, I'm not able to make it heard. I apologize for this. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Hold on one more time. And that button has to be pushed before this will work. Here we go.
And double-double, you guys get back to your winning ways. It was an 8-point game at halftime. What turned around in the third quarter?
Just getting multiple stops. You know, coach challenged us. You know, we're at home. We got to put a better effort out. And the guys responded. We came out, got multiple stops. And, you know, when we get on transition, we're very good.
Not that often we see you put the ball on the floor and flip it out to LeBron James for three. You talked about the extra 1% everyone has to bring. Was that an example of that?
The coaches are doing a great job. We watch your film, and you know, on the short roll, you got to be able to find your teammates. And tonight, found LeBron for the spray off the three. So everyone's got to be a playmaker sometimes and make plays for other teammates.
Okay, now I'm going to stop that there. The reason I like that clip is the last thing that he said there. He said everybody's got to be a playmaker at times, and I have to make plays for my teammates. I don't think that's an accidental choice of words from Tristan Thompson. This is after, now mind you, they're on a little modest two-game winning streak. That was after they snapped their losing streak against the Nets. And he said, well, everybody's got to be a playmaker from time to time. And then, of course, now it's a two-game streak because they took apart the Thunder last night. I want to play the very last part of that clip again if I could, because I think that was important where he talked about playmaking.
Was that an example of that?
The coaches are doing a great job. We watch your film, and, you know, on the short roll, you got to be able to find your teammates. And, tonight, found LeBron for the spray off the three. So everyone's got to be a playmaker sometimes and make plays for other teammates.
It was just a week ago that LeBron James said, and he used an expletive, he said, we need to get a blank, blank playmaker. And again, most people assume he's talking about a backup point guard because, you know, Kyrie Irving is already a pretty good playmaker. He himself is a pretty good playmaker. What is he talking about? So here's Tristan Thompson saying, you know, we heard you call us out. In my mind, this is Tristan Thompson saying this. We heard you call us out. There's not enough playmakers. There's not enough stuff being done. There's not enough weapons you know, get, you know, for this team to find, to use, to compete with some of the better teams. So we already have playmakers here, all of us. And he made that point. And then he went into what I believe is, you know, kind of fueled by the LeBron James comments, a defense of his own production as it pertains to his own salary. The debate and the dispute last week was, you know, LeBron James basically questioning whether or not Dan Gilbert is truly committed to spending as much as it takes to spend to win another championship. There was an almost universal counter, Dave McMenamin wrote about this, to James' claim. LeBron James is the one who told Dan Gilbert how to spend his money. He said, pay JR and pay Tristan in free agency in each of the last two summers, even though it was going to put the Cavaliers way over the NBA's salary cap and into the luxury tax realm. But Gilbert did it anyway. And so now some are saying, well, did they overpay? Is this luxury tax problem because they paid too much? Because LeBron James wanted him being Dan Gilbert to, did they pay too much for just a couple of guys, and therefore it left the roster lean in other areas? Well, this is why Tristan Thompson spoke out. And he finally wanted to say, now this is after the Oklahoma City win. So the first clip you heard about him being a playmaker was after the Nets win that snapped their losing streak. Now this is after their second straight win against Oklahoma City. I don't have the audio of this one. I'm going to read this one to you so I can take a little more time with it. I earned my money, he said. And this is a five-year, $82 million contract he signed. I earned my money. LeBron is not my agent. I earned my money doing what I do. You can ask anyone around the league. I open doors for other guys. It's a business, and you get paid what the market value is for you. I got my money and opened up doors for other guys that play hard and do the little things. I actually like that comment, by the way. And it's true. What he does isn't something that's easily measured by statistics. He's not going to be in the Russell Westbrook triple-double race. He's not going to be in the LeBron James realm of 28 points a game or whatever the case might be. He does the little things, and he does them well, and they are very, very valuable to the Cavaliers. So he's saying my value and my money I earned because I earned it, not because LeBron James told them to pay me. That last part is where I would disagree. LeBron essentially was his agent. LeBron essentially told Dan Gilbert, hey, I came back to Cleveland to win a championship. You better do these things because I know what it takes. You better do these things if you want me to be happy and if you want us to win a championship. Pay my man Tristan, give him what the market value says he should get, and keep him in Cleveland. Then he said this past summer, pay my man JR. But I want to stay on Tristan. It was as good of a time as any for Thompson to speak up. He just came off of his strongest game of the season. 19 points, 12 boards. I told you he had a monster game. 19 points, 12 boards, 4 steals, and 4 blocks. Two of those blocks coming against Russell Westbrook, which is outstanding. And he was the anchor of a defense that held the Thunder to 37% shooting as a team, including Westbrook, who was 7 for 26 last night. For me, Thompson said, the way I judge a game is what I do on the defensive end. That's my calling. Right? So making it tough for Adams, keeping him from getting a double-double, it's a good game. Obviously, the scoring, that's extra. That's a cherry on top. That's a bonus. So as long as I take care of what my duty is every night, everything else is extra. Now, as far as the LeBron commentary about his teammates not, you know, carrying their weight and maybe even earning their money, the call for everyone to do a little bit extra on a nightly basis was Tristan Thompson's response. Thompson cut loose a little bit, dropped a few curse words on Thursday during a media session that lasted a little more than 7 minutes. He said that LeBron is the leader on this team. He said he's going to make his comments, and at the end of the day, we all have to play better from the top to bottom. Players got to play better. We got to prepare. Everyone that's part of this journey, coaches, we all got to be better. And again, I'm quoting Tristan Thompson from Thursday. And I apologize for bebopping around here. I gave you the post-Nets game comment, then the post-Thunder game comments. Now I'm going back to Thursday on an off day. He said everyone has to take a step forward and just be 1% better. So LeBron's comments is what it is, he said. I really don't give an F. I just got to keep playing better. We've got to keep playing harder, and he's right. We all got to play better. It's simple. You see the horses out there doing what we're doing. So now I'm going to, again, be bopping around here time-wise, fast-forwarding to post-game yesterday after the Cavaliers beat up on Russell Westbrook and the Thunder. Kyrie Irving said of Tristan Thompson's 19.12 rebound force block shot effort, it's about time. It's about time, and he knows it too, really being our anchor on the backside of the defense. When he's doing that as well as rebounding and contesting shots, he's amazing. He knows what he means on this team. He knows he has to play at a high level, especially in the center role, to be the anchor of the defense. And then, of course, there's LeBron, who in true form managed to compliment Thompson while tweaking Cavaliers management yet another time in the same breath about spending and about players. Quote, he's the one rim protector that we have, and we need him to continue to do that. Making guys adjust their shots, blocking shots, cleaning glass. You know he's going to clean glass, but when he's active like that, trying to get shots blocked and things of that nature, it helps us a lot. So the little tweak there is he's the one rim protector that we have. Code word, a second one. Or code words, a second one. We need more. We need more of that. And I guess I can understand that, but I would not be so quick to argue for it if I'm being honest here, because Dan Gilbert is trying to run a business while winning championships. And did you see the numbers and where they are right now? A team source recently pointed out to ESPN that Forbes' estimation is that the Cavaliers lost $40 million in their championship season. And they said that that estimation of $40 million was actually too low. It's probably much more than that. They lost $40 million because of the salaries, because of the luxury tax. They lost money, $40 million, and that means they're going to probably lose even more this year if you take a look at what their payroll is, $127 million. Right now, staring about a $27 million luxury tax right in the face. That's $154 million that it's going to cost. They're going to lose money again this season in the tens of millions. How long can an owner do that? Just because he's trying to chase championships. At some point, you have to make your business profitable. At some point. But Thompson didn't want to hear any of that. Every year there is somebody, he said, whether it's JaVale McGee, then Vujovic, then Farid, then myself, then Bismack Biyombo. Mozgov got paid this summer, too, he said. It's a trickle-down effect. It is whatever the market value is. I'm not worried about it. Whatever the market value is, you got to pay. It's part of the business. At the end of the day, I'm going to do my job and whatever it takes to win and what my teammates need me to do. I don't need to go out there and prove myself or prove my contract. I've already earned my keep, but the key is to keep building every day and never be satisfied. So I'm curious, and you can take this and you can expand it or you can elevate it or you can, whatever it is you want to call it, you know, spread it out to other places. Do you think that the NBA players, and I guess we could even take this into the other sports too, do they have a true, honest respect and understanding of exactly what their owners are doing and what they're facing? Look, Dan Gilbert is a very, very wealthy man, but he didn't become wealthy by losing tens of millions of dollars a year during his business. And if he lost $40 million plus last year with the Cavaliers, he's not going to be very wealthy for long. I don't care how wealthy he is. You lose $40 million this year, $40 million the next year, that's $80 million. You keep doing that, you're going to get yourself up into the B word. And the B word, of course, is billions. I know you might be thinking of other ones. But do you think they really care? And should they care? Because if you ask me, I think what LeBron James is asking for is a little bit unreasonable, given the fact that Gilbert already answered the bell and gave him all of the things he wanted, all the little toys and pieces and parts, with the exception of paying Dellavedova $11 million a year just to be their backup point guard, or Mozgov $14 million a year, which is what he ended up getting, to be their third string front court player. You can't do that with everybody. I think it just is asking a little bit too much. So I want to get your thoughts on that at 866-240-1065. We'll get you on the radio as quickly as we can. I do want to talk also a little bit more about the Pistons and their struggles to get any kind of consistency. Both teams play tonight, by the way. For Detroit, they are at Boston. In the aforementioned Celtics, which have elevated themselves to number 2 in the Eastern Conference right now behind the play of Isaiah Thomas primarily, So Detroit is at Boston. Boston now 29-18 in that surge. And the Cavaliers at 32-14, trying to overcome those doldrums, and they've won two in a row now. Now they play the very, very weak Dallas Mavericks. They're at Dallas tonight. That'll be an 8:30 start, and the Mavericks come in at 17-30 there. So that's where we are as far as the teams that that we like and we like to talk to you about. So if you've got some thoughts on whether or not you think that Dan Gilbert needs to do it because Tristan Thompson, because LeBron James, I mean, look, Callis. I like that Tristan is defending himself, saying, look, LeBron didn't just, I disagree with him. He said, LeBron's not my agent. He didn't get me this money. My hustle, my effort, my talent got me this money. But I think he's a little off. His talent certainly is part of it. But if LeBron James hadn't pushed, chances are Dan Gilbert wouldn't have given this guy $82 million. LeBron James did do that. So for him to just say the market is what it is and whatever the market value is, you got to pay. I don't like that. I think that's a little bit callous. I think it's a little bit unfair to the ownership. He said it's just part of the business. Well, maybe it is, but I don't like that part of the business. I think there has to be room for negotiation, fair negotiation between player and management. And it's not just whatever the market value is, you've got to pay. Because if you're already paying $27 million in luxury tax this year and counting, well, it's not that simple. And to me, LeBron James really mistreated Dan Gilbert with that statement, saying, you know what, he said he would pay whatever it took. He said money is not an obstacle. He will pay whatever it takes to win a championship and then win multiple championships. But you know what, there comes a time when I think the players have to give a little bit as well. Whether that's Thompson or just LeBron, I don't know, but that's what I'd love to talk to you about. So we'll get into that a little bit, and then also coming up in the next hour, as I mentioned before, there is a Hall of Fame baseball player that is not very happy about the new crop of Hall of Fame baseball players. We spent a great deal of conversation on this last week and prior to that. The idea that Jeff Bagwell and Ivan Rodriguez, former Tiger, both were elected to the Hall of Fame despite a lot of nagging rumors about their performance-enhancing drug use during their heyday. They made it to the Hall of Fame, and we talked about whether or not that is a harbinger of things to come, whether or not that means Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Manny Ramirez, later when he's eligible, Alex Rodriguez, and these guys will also have a pathway to the Hall since a couple of suspected steroid cheats are in. Will the other suspected steroid cheats get in? Well, one non-steroid cheat who is in is not happy about it. The Big Hurt wants to put a big hurt on the Hall of Fame voters. He said very directly, I am not happy at all. The Big Hurt, Frank Thomas, said some of these guys were great players, but they wouldn't have been great players without their drugs. He said, I don't mind the guys doing what they have to do for their families and to make their money, but don't come calling to the Hall of Fame and saying, I'm supposed to be in the Hall of Fame when you know you cheated. That is an incredibly strong statement by Frank Thomas, and I could not agree with it more. I will back him up every single step of the way. And if he wants to say, look, you know, guys wanted to cheat so they can get their next big contract by putting up big numbers, if you want to do that for your family, I guess that's okay. But understand you're selling out your legacy, and you then don't get to be called one of the great players of all time with induction into the Hall of Fame. You don't get to do that if you are going to cheat. I think it's a fantastic thing. More clean Hall of Famers need to stand up. And not even just Hall of Famers. More clean players from the steroid era. Kenny Lofton comes to mind because we've talked about him. More of these guys need to stand up and really speak out against the Hall of Fame, kind of starting to bend their will a little bit and to allow these individuals in while, you know, essentially shutting out the great players whose numbers paled in comparison to the PED-aided numbers that so many of those guys put up. So I think it's a fantastic statement by Frank Thomas. I've got more on that. Mike Golic and Mike Greenberg had some more on that as well. They're doing a Super Bowl coverage this week as they're broadcasting live from Houston, but there is time for that baseball conversation. They made it this morning. I'm going to play a little bit of that for you and then get your thoughts on it as well. At 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Hey, before we take our time out here at the top of the hour, too, how would you like to go to the fights? It's coming up. It's just a little over, well, it's about 11 days away. Toledo's own Robert Easter is going to defend his IBF lightweight championship against Luis Cruz. It's going to be at the Hunting Center on February 10th. We gave away tickets all last week, and I believe we have one more pair. And I'll give that pair of tickets away to you right now. If you are caller number 10 to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, right here on the ticket.
And taking the contact. Well, LeBron went up strong that time inside. Kyrie Irving with the floater on the baseline knocks it down. What great time by LeBron James to Richard Jefferson.
Beautiful cut. Beautiful backdoor cut.
Shumpert for three. Yes.
Oh,
what a great move.
He
put Westbrook in the blender and got the bucket.
Now that was a great move.
Jefferson on the backdoor slam.
Now that was eye contact. As soon as LeBron turned his back to the basket, Jefferson on that left side of the floor, backdoor. That was beautiful eye contact.
Kyrie Irving knocks down the 15-foot jump shot.
So I play good basketball. Tonight we did that and started with the defensive end. You know, early on, we couldn't make many shots, but we were still defending. If we do that, we're going to give ourselves a good chance to win every night.
Just want to play good basketball. I don't have any, it's no hope for me. Just play ball. Play ball the right way and deliver the results.
You know, guarding that guy is a total team effort, but it starts initially when the ball's being picked up, and I think Sean did a great job of, you know, sending him to the screen every time, as well as T-Top being ready to, you know, drop and being our defense. And then our weak side was very communicative, and we did what we were supposed to. That we've had some, you know, some practice time, you know, to correct the things that we've been lacking over the last few games, understanding that teams are coming in and, you know, giving us their all. And for us, we got to be even more sharp, especially on the defensive end. And we're getting stops when we're communicating. We're a hard team to beat. Offense, you know, won't look pretty every single night, but when you got high-level players on this team ready to knock down shots, you know, we can worry about that. But it starts on the defensive end, and that's where, you know, we'll make our mark.
When you go from one spot from home to another, to the Super Bowl site, now you have to readjust. You have to find a meeting room. If you like to watch film individually by yourself, that's over with. Now you're watching it as a group. You have to go through the scheduling process, the media requests that you have. And I think that's the number one issue that I had when I was transitioning, was going from Valley Ranch in Dallas to wherever it was, either Atlanta or California or whatnot. It's getting there and then having to make sure everything's okay and getting comfortable in my own skin as far as watching film and spending time with family or whatnot.
The thing about being a first-time quarterback in the Super Bowl, no matter what you may tell everyone and how you may look or come across during the week, the pressure's on your shoulders because you know what class or what level you will be in if you do win this game.
We've accomplished a lot, but we still got one more to go. It's going to be tough. It's going to be the toughest one we've had all year, but we're excited about the opportunity. So as Coach tells us, put all that crap that you got to deal with in the drawer. Put it all away for one more week, because we need you guys at your best, because we need to be at our best.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know, here's a really interesting question as we get hour number two underway right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's a really interesting question about what you just heard. And by the way, if you didn't notice some of the other voices there, Darren Woodson, ESPN NFL analyst, and also Donovan McNabb, who had a chance in this game and did not win a Super Bowl, but he talked about, you know, the pressure that's on yourself because you know what it's going to do for your legacy if you do win one, if you do become a champion, a championship-winning quarterback. And he's right, 100% right. But Tom Brady at the end, a really interesting question just kind of came to mind. And you might think, hey, quit being hypocritical. You just said you're going to root for Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons to win against Tom Brady and the Patriots. And I am. But I am also curious of this, as to the answer to this question. Is it okay to start rooting for Tom Brady because you can't stand Roger Goodell? It's so funny. I find myself now for the second time in 3 years, not last year, obviously, because it was the Broncos in the Super Bowl against Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. But the year before, when it was Brady and the Patriots against Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, and the Seahawks, I just despised the Seahawks so much that I found myself for the first time in a Super Bowl rooting for Tom Brady. And it's one of those lesser of two evils things. Or it's one of those the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of a thing, right? So I've always been kind of enemies, if you will, always a hater of the Patriot way. I feel like it's not always honest. I feel like it's a little bit of privilege, a little bit of entitlement, a little bit of arrogance on the part of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. So I've never been a fan. But it was just my dislike of Sherman and Baldwin and Lynch and Carroll more than any of them on the Seattle Seahawks squad that made me reform. And now here we are. I have another enemy. And does the enemy of my enemy then become my friend? I don't like Roger Goodell. I don't like him. I don't like his policies. I don't like what he has done to people. I don't like the way he handled Ray Rice. I don't like the way he handled Greg Hardy. I don't like the way he handled Tom Brady. I don't like the way he's handled so many things having to do with the league when it comes to discipline, when it comes to fairness, equality, the stupid rules that he puts in. I'm not a fan of Roger Goodell. And I felt like what happened to Tom Brady was absolutely ridiculous. When he suspended him for 4 games after already punishing the Patriots for this ridiculously, hey, the footballs were underinflated nonsense, one of the dumbest rules in the history of sports. I mean, really, it is. One of the dumbest rules ever. As if to say, and this is what made it so stupid for Goodell to do this, that all of Tom Brady's records, all of Tom Brady's championships, all of his remarkable achievements may be tainted now because of the revelation that we believe, even though they had no, you know, eventually they had no proof at the end of the day, ultimately, they didn't have any proof whatsoever. They had a whole bunch of innuendo. They had a whole bunch of speculation. There's some guy that was called the deflator on the staff, all this other nonsense, right? That the suggestion that one of the game's greatest stars cheated and that his legacy should be defined by this and somehow is what Roger Goodell kind of brought up by suspending him for 4 games after already dealing with the Patriots and taking away draft picks, finding them $1 million, all the other nonsense. It's almost like this guy isn't as good as he thinks he is or says he is. He's just never been doing it the right way. Well, here he is 1 year after all of this crap goes down. He has to serve the actual suspension at the start of this year. And all he does is go out there and play with balls that are clearly, absolutely going to be fully inflated within the letter of the law because of all of this nonsense. And he has his best year at the age of 39, or at least one of them. In 12 games, it might have been his best year. He set a record in TD interception ratio of 28-2. So it just proves that he is that good. And it also underscores how bad that rule is, how stupid that rule was in the first place. It's not like basketball and baseball. If it's baseball, each pitcher should have to throw the same kind of baseball with the same, you know, level of hardness, if you want to call it that, because, you know, but going back to the era of the juiced ball versus the dead ball era and all of this other nonsense. Everybody should have to use the same one, and every hitter should have the same one, because it is indeed a level playing field. Basketball, the ball, there is only one ball, so it's got to be inflated to one particular, amount of PSI. If one point guard likes it bouncier because he's got better handles, can control it, the other point guard has to use the same ball. So that's not right. We just have to have one uniform level. But in football, the quarterback, or I should say the football that one quarterback throws is not the football that the other guy throws. If one guy has smaller hands and likes less air in the ball, fine, because as soon as the other team comes onto the field, the other team's offense comes onto the field, you know, your team's ball goes out and the new ball comes in with the new quarterback. And if one guy likes it inflated to a round position, the way it's with so much PSI that it's like a basketball, and he can throw it like that, God bless you, good on you. Aaron Rodgers is one that likes a really fully overinflated ball. And if another guy wants to deflate it so much so that it looks like a Frisbee, and I've used that analogy before, I know, but it's true, then so what? If you can throw it, good on you. It's your offense that's using it. It's one of the stupidest rules ever. So because of my disdain for the rules, my disdain for Roger Goodell, my disdain for his discipline policies, my disdain for his hypocrisy, is it okay to start rooting for Tom Brady and the Patriots? Just to shove it blank, you know, up Roger Goodell's blank blank. I mean, in all truthfulness, I think Roger Goodell is one of the worst people in all of sports. He gets paid some $30, $40 million a year to run one of the most prestigious sports leagues into the ground from a reputation and public scrutiny standpoint. It's just an absolute embarrassment. My disgust for Goodell may make me one day root for Tom Brady. And it might even be this weekend, except for the fact that I have pledged that I would like to see Atlanta get their first championship. I would like to see Matty Ryan get his first championship and put a cap on one of the great passing seasons anybody has ever had. All right. Now, having said all of that, I don't want to do much more here because coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk college basketball with the great voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, Paul Keels. And after that, we're going to talk a little football with Mike Golic Jr., whose father, of course, is one half of ESPN's Mike and Mike that we hear each and every day right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Now I'm setting something up here. Bear with me. Hall of Famer Frank Thomas said over the weekend, apparently, that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, two notorious steroid cheats that Thomas and others has very, very, you know, stringently opposed access to the Hall of Fame because of their steroid use. I mean, he has been an outspoken critic of these guys ever getting into the Hall. He doesn't like the idea at all. He now says that they might as well put them in. Quote, this is at the annual fan convention. He said this for the White Sox on Saturday. You know, like the Indians had Tribe Fest, the Tiger. I mean, you know these things. Anyway, he said they should be in now, as far as I'm concerned, because they've let a few people in already that we all know. It's uncomfortable at this point. I'm sure this year's it's going to be uncomfortable, meaning the induction ceremony, because we've got two great players going in. But I know it's no secret. If they didn't do it, they would have been stomping and kicking in interviews and saying, I didn't do this. He's talking, of course, about Pudge Rodriguez and Jeff Bagwell, who did get in despite their allegations of PED use, along with Tim Raines, who'd never used PEDs, but who was once convicted of using cocaine. But that's another story. Anyway, Thomas said he is not happy at all to see these performance-enhancing drug users getting into the Hall of Fame. Quote, not happy at all. Some of these guys were great players, but they wouldn't have been great players without the drugs. I don't mind these guys doing what they want to do for their families and to make money, but don't come calling to the Hall of Fame and saying I'm supposed to be in the Hall of Fame when you know you cheated. He also said he's not the only one who feels this way. Quote, trust me, there's a lot of internal talk going on. A lot of guys that I respect that are real true Hall of Famers, all they have is their legacy. They didn't make this kind of money, and they are not happy about this at all. So what Thomas, who, by the way, is a two-time league MVP, 521 home runs in his career from 1990 to 2008. He was inducted in 2014. Spoke out against PED use during his career, and he said he lost a lot of friendships over this as a result. Though he did acknowledge using amphetamines known as greenies for energy boosts early in his career from time to time, but that is very different. He said, quote, there are some days where you just don't have the energy to do anything. It's 7 days a week. It's a grind. You're flying all the time, all of the night. We don't have the restrictions they have now, or we didn't have the restrictions they've got now. We used to get into cities at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning and have a day game. And when I first came up, they kind of cleaned it up as I got older in the league. It was rough travel, but it did give you more energy, talking about the greenies. Very, very different, of course, than PEDs. But he said essentially now that they should be in because they've already screwed this up and allowed some of the steroid cheats in. If you're going to allow some of the steroid cheats in, you might as well allow all of the steroid cheats in. Well, Mike Golic and Mike Greenberg of Mike and Mike in the Morning, and again, I segue to we're going to have Mike Golic Jr. on, coming up here in the next half hour, they kicked this around. And Mike Golic was not real strong in support of Frank Thomas's position on this because of the quote-unquote evidence that he either has or lacks.
Is that Frank Thomas's proof that somebody lost some weight or somebody was mentioned in Jose Canseco's book so they're guilty? And also, if they don't stamp their feet and scream from the mountaintops, I knew a guy who did that. Roger Clemens.
Yeah, he did stamp his feet and scream for the mountaintops and go to Congress. And
won in court, did he not? Yet nobody believes that he didn't use, right?
Yes, his victory in court was that he was found not guilty of perjury.
Of lying to
Congress. So, but yes, your point
so
is
So here's
correct.
A guy who did stomp his feet from the mountaintops, and it seems Frank mentions Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens should be in the Hall. So he thinks Roger used. So I'm a little confused. You know, at that, and I know I'll get ripped right now because I know I use and people think it's okay, and never said I said it was okay, but we both agree that we would put players in, and then I keep bringing it up all the time and get and mocked for it as well. You know, here's a guy that used amphetamines. He admits he used amphetamines and then tries to explain it by saying, you know, it's a 7 day a week, the traveling, it's a grind, I just used it for energy. Okay, but you use something illegal. I'm not saying it's PEDs. I'm not saying it's roids. I'm not. But you did. So, you know what? Not everybody's clean. You know, you're clean from PEDs. And amphetamines are illegal, and you use them. And they helped you. They helped you artificially, correct?
Sure, of course.
That's what amphetamines do. So, you know what? There's part of me that just says, I don't really need to hear it.
And I don't really need to hear that from Mike Golic, because if anybody is going to try to convince me that PEDs in the form of steroids are the same thing as amphetamines, then we're going to have a fight. To say that one thing which makes your muscles bigger, it makes your hand speed faster, it makes your foot speed faster, it makes you go from warning track power to home run power on high fly balls, is the same thing as somebody popping caffeine tablets and making themselves more alert. It's like amphetamines are like drinking coffee to give you more energy and to make you more awake before the crash. Eventually, there is a crash, by the way. Don't tell me that those are the same, Mike Golic. That is something that I just have a big problem with. I understand he is going to be very defensive. And look, this is one of those things where it's hard to balance the employer with the employee and their feelings. ESPN has a massive contract with Major League Baseball. And ESPN is going to back up a lot of things, I believe, that baseball wants backed up. And if baseball wants their superstars from the steroid era to get in, they're going to do that. I just wonder how much commentary is sometimes impacted by where guys work. That's all I'm saying. I am not going to worry about the fact that ESPN is in front of the name of this radio station, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, because I'm going to tell you the way it is. That's crap. Bonds and Clemens and Sosa and McGuire and all these guys are cheats. They should never go in. Frank Thomas is 100% right to be angry. He's 100% right to be upset. He's 100% right to point out that other Hall of Famers are disgusted by the fact that steroid cheats are going into the Hall of Fame. And anybody who tries to make the amphetamine argument that it's the same as PEDs, it's falling on deaf ears. It's simply not reality. All right, we're going to get a timeout now because we're going to come back and talk to Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, about college basketball. Then Mike Golic Jr., will talk to us about a number of NFL items as we continue. Right here.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed it is. As we roll onward right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, we are Toledo's sports leader. Time to talk a little Ohio State basketball as we do each and every Monday during the winter season. And Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, joins us once again with a breakdown. Hey, Paul, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, Bob. How you doing?
I am fantastic. Are you geeked up? Do you get fired up for Super Bowl week?
That day, usually, yeah. It seems as though, and I don't know how you are, but once they kind of moved it to a night game rather than like a mid or a late afternoon game, that kind of has taken a little of the steam out of it for me, only because you kind of get caught up in, you know, if you have the day off, you get caught up in doing whatever else it is you do, and then by the time the game comes around, you're maybe not, it's just a game. It's not like it used to be when it was kind of an event. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does. It's a really interesting point, and I'll be honest with you, when you said, you know, you're maybe on the day of, maybe so, because you have 8 to 10 hours of pregame that day. You know what I mean? If it was a daytime game, a noon game or a 1 o'clock game, like it was way back in the day before it was prime time, you know, the week leading up was a little bit more important maybe. And especially when it was only a week leading up and not 2 weeks, but you got a 2 week gap now. And then you have 8 to 10 hours of pregame during the day. You can pretty much get your fill of everything you need to know about both teams playing on the morning or the day of the game. That's a very interesting point.
Then I think it depends too on if you know, how you feel about the two teams that are involved. And, you know, if it's somebody you follow or somebody you have an interest, maybe that makes a big difference. And, you know, with no dog in this fight, certainly it'll be appointment watching, but it's just kind of almost like another game.
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting point. I don't have a dog in the fight either, other than the whole, you know, hey, if you hate the evil Patriots empire, then you want them to lose. But then again, if you hate the way Roger Goodell conducts business, then well, maybe you want them to win even a little bit more. So it would be nice to see a team that has never won it before win their first championship as well, like the Atlanta Falcons. So there are some sub-stories there that are interesting, subplots, if you will. All right, Paul Keels, let's talk about Ohio State basketball. Just, you know, the up-and-down run, I guess, if you will. The roller coaster continues a little bit after, kind of a disheartening loss to Northwestern at home, then a win over Minnesota, and now a double-digit loss to Iowa minus their best player, 85-72. What's going on?
Well, you know, first off, Iowa deserves a lot of credit for how well they played, and how well they played minus Peter Jok. But, This was one where you really saw Ohio State defensively kind of fall apart during the course of the whole game. Offensively, they couldn't make the adjustments they needed to make, given the fact that Trevor Thompson was double-teamed pretty much from the start of the game. They couldn't navigate around foul trouble, and there seemed to be just a disconnect with the players on the floor with one another. And that's really kind of the first time that we've seen that this year. And that was a little bit of the disheartening part about it. I don't know that on a neutral floor anybody would argue that Iowa's a better team than Ohio State. But, you know, when it kind of gets away from you on the road like that, and you get a team and a fan base that's watching their club come about breaking a three-game losing streak and shooting the ball incredibly well, yeah, all of those things really led to a very flat and a very disappointing effort from this basketball team. But, you know, with still a fair amount of time left to try and make somewhat of a decent impression on who follows this team, there's still opportunities there. And, you know, and they've got to shake it off quickly with Maryland coming in tomorrow night. Another great opportunity for them to make a great showing. But that was very disheartening with how that game fell apart like that.
Paul, when you talk about, you know, the disjointedness, if that was the word you used, and that's the one that came to mind as you described it. My apologies if it isn't exactly right. But the way that they were on the court with one another, just out of sync, maybe the chemistry wasn't there for whatever reason. To what do you attribute that at this stage? You know, this isn't week two. This is week three of the conference schedule, I believe. So, you know, you're getting into the, you know, real meat and headed to the latter part of the season now. What, 24, 22, 20, 22 games in, beg your pardon, I think. To what do you attribute the lack of chemistry and the lack of cohesion, if you will, on the court at this time?
Well, I think, Bob, what we've seen is there's not a real defined leader on this team. They're guys who at times can lead well by their playing, lead well by their attitudes, but there's not a, you know, there's not a Michael Redd, an Aaron Kraft, a David Leidy, you know, the kind of guys, even a Jarrett Sullinger, guys that, you know, could kind of pull everybody together and lead not only just from a vocal standpoint based on their personality, but also guys that can go make a big play when a team really needs it to. You know, it's a team that we've seen doesn't have a consistent outside shooting threat, although Cam Williams at times can be that. But quite honestly, Cam Williams at times can help this team when he drives to the basket and creates free throw opportunities. You know, Trevor Thompson has been consistently, by stats from offense and a rebounding standpoint, the best player on this team this year. But Trevor isn't necessarily a guy that is that kind of leader with the previous examples we've talked about. You know, there just hasn't been the development of somebody that's really become a leader like that can help pull them together. And whether you put that on the individual players, you put them on them as a group, if you put it on the coaches, I'm not sure exactly what the answer is. I know the coaching staff's frustrated and trying everything they can differently to figure out different ways to approach things. I'll tell you this though, Bob, you know, even the fact that they were as flat as they were in that game was a little surprising, having watched them warm up before the game, having watched them in their shoot around earlier that day, and seeing how they did all of the things they needed to do to pull together in that Minnesota game that you made reference. Right. So that's the frustrating part about this team. They've shown us stretches of some very good basketball at the time, just not consistent from game to game and within stretches of a particular game.
We're talking Buckeye basketball with the great voice of the Buckeyes, Paul Keels. You hear him right here, of course, on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, as part of the Buckeyes Radio Network. Jim Cushlin is along with us. Jimmy, go ahead.
And you know, let's get to that Minnesota game, obviously, because this was a split week for the Buckeyes, and the loss was the other day. This was last Wednesday, and you know, you're talking about Trevor Thompson and how I was able to get it. Well, he had a double-double, 19 and 10 with three blocks this one. Mark Loving, of course, the Toledo area product, he had 19. And Minnesota's a pretty solid team. And so that was one of those games where a lot of things felt like it came together. And then, as you mentioned, even during warm-ups leading into the Iowa game the other day, and then it just didn't went on the court. So tell me about some of the good things, at least from last week, which was in that Minnesota game.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Minnesota, Jim, because I think they've now lost, what, four or five in a row, but and their losses have all been by close point margins. But they're a team that also beat Ohio State by 10 points in the first meeting in Minneapolis. You saw Mark Loving have a big game. It was a season high, but you know, Mark has not been consistent with his offensive output. There have been games when he's looked fantastic. In the Minnesota game, he made plays that we haven't seen him make all year, but then had a difficult time, and not just he, but he had a difficult time against Iowa on Saturday. And I think that's kind of, you know, Trevor Thompson's been prior to Saturday night the consistent offensive contributor on this basketball team. I think you see Jayshon Tate at times does that. But where this game kind of, the Saturday game got away from him, at the end of the first half, both Loving, Tate, and Thompson each had two fouls. And so they're having to finish the tail end of the first half for the most part without any of those three guys on the floor. You know, and while Minnesota has had that losing streak we mentioned, Ohio State has a loss in a game that doesn't look good. Then they have a game that looks good. Then they have they weren't doing the things they did when they beat Michigan State, showing the effort, showing the energy, diving on the floor for balls, things like that. And it's a team that doesn't have a lot of wiggle room when it comes to margin for error. So it's hard to put a finger on one exact thing, but again, the thing that has you scratch your head is because they can play the way they did against Purdue, even though that was a loss. Play the way they did at home against Minnesota and Michigan State, and even against Northwestern, even though that was a loss. It's a team that just befuddles you sometimes because of that.
Paul, what's it going to take? Tomorrow night, it's the number 17 team in the country, 19-2, 7-1 in the conference. Maryland, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, what kind of an effort is it going to take, or what kind of a strategy? What are they going to use to be able to take down Maryland?
And Bob, a Maryland team that's not lost away from home this year. Their two losses have come at home. You know, what I think it's going to take is a team that shows up and shows energy. A team that gets off to a good start like they did against Minnesota, you know, like they've done in some of the other games, like Northwestern. I think it's going to be a team that's going to have to figure out how to adjust to what adjustments get made to them. Meaning, you know, Iowa double-teamed Trevor Thompson right away Saturday night. How to adjust from that? How to handle when all of a sudden another team gets on a roll, because, you know, that's going to happen with everybody. But just for this team to be mentally engaged, mentally supportive of one another, and to come out and play with a lot of effort and enthusiasm. And, you know, hopefully that'll get the crowd behind them, and being at home hopefully will help. But that's an awfully good basketball team they're playing tomorrow night.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point you make, too. They play better, or at least, you know, in terms of not having lost yet on the road than even at home. So that's another tough part of the battle for the Buckeyes. Hopefully Coach Mata will have the boys ready, and hopefully Paul will be talking about a victory there and another one next week when we chat again. Sound all right?
Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it. Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, joining us. Got to get out now, make some room. We're going to talk to Mike Golic Jr. coming up next. Super Bowl week continues, and so does our preview coverage of the Patriots and the Falcons with Mike Golic Jr. of ESPN coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Kuslin hanging out with you now. We've been talking about it off and on, as of course is the case, all week long. And today, we welcome in for a little bit of a different perspective on the upcoming Super Bowl, Falcons, Patriots. And you can hear this gentleman here weekdays 7 to 9 right here on 106.5 The Ticket, courtesy of ESPN Radio, the Weekend Observation Show, Junior to Mike Golic, who of course you hear every weekday morning here for Mike and Mike here on The Ticket. We welcome into the program Mike Golic Jr. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Really appreciate you having me on here.
No, the pleasure and the appreciation is all from this end for being able to give a little different voice on what we think coming up. So let's just start right there. We're talking about it, of course, all week, all the various things that we'll hear coming up leading up to this game on Sunday night, the Super Bowl number 51. It's the Patriots and the Falcons. And what is the first thing among many that jumps out to you, Mike, based on this matchup?
I think the thing that jumps out is you look at it on paper and the talent appears to be much more in favor of the Atlanta Falcons, right? I mean, look at nothing more emblematic of who these two teams are than their championship game performances. Atlanta had Julio Jones go off for 180 yards and a huge day for him. Their known commodity, their biggest offensive star probably, maybe outside of their quarterback and Matt Ryan, in Julio Jones, and then the New England Patriots in their championship game have, wait for it, Chris Hogan go for 180 yards receiving and have a monster game for them right there. So it just shows you that both of these teams, super potent on offense, should be a ton of points. I know they're expecting that, the Vegas odds makers are, but for Atlanta, it's going to come from all these sources that you know, whereas New England, they continue to be the offensive chameleon. They're going to figure out, all right, who's the hot hand for the day, who's got the best matchup, and they believe that they've got enough guys capable of having a Chris Hogan-like day to be effective in whatever means they need to be.
And you're so right, by the way, about a lot of people thinking this may turn into a shootout. That Vegas line, 58.5 for the over-under on this one, and I kind of buy that. And, you know, Mike, and this is Mike Golic Jr. of Weekend Observations, which you can hear every Sunday morning from ESPN Radio here on the Ticket 7 to 9 every Sunday morning. When I think of the Falcons, in addition to some of the weapons they have, and you just mentioned some of them, the first thing that I come back to, it has to be Matt Ryan. He's had a career year this year. He may very well end up the MVP. And this is from somebody, and I'll just be full disclosure here, Mike. When we were on this on our show a couple weeks back, we were thinking about who may deserve the MVP. I actually left Matt Ryan off my list. I really did on the grounds of, well, it is a career year, yes, but I don't trust the Falcons and yada, yada, yada. But here we are a couple days out from Super Bowl 51, and Matt Ryan, you know, is still right there. And the argument that I've come to the conclusion of over these last couple weeks is this is very career possible defining for Matt Ryan. Who knows when he or the Falcons will get back to this point, and a win for Matt Ryan and the Falcons, and suddenly he'll go forward with a ring and all the things that carries with it, which may make people view his career much differently. And a loss, who knows if the Falcons are going to get back. Maybe he falls into that mid-range of quarterbacks that kind of sometimes get forgotten. Do you think this is a career legacy going forward defining moment for Matt Ryan?
Oh, it's impossible to overstate how big this could be for Matt Ryan. And I think just the nature of getting here and how they did has already helped a ton. Because you are perfectly emblematic of what so many people were like. They were in wait-and-see mode with the Atlanta Falcons, a team who on offense throughout the season was historic in the numbers they were putting up and led the NFL in so many different categories. But everyone was saying, well, it's the Falcons. Well, it's Matt Ryan. Let's see if they can actually do it when it matters. And then you go out and you beat Seattle. And then you go out and beat Aaron Rodgers. And when you talk about the MVP conversation down the stretch of the season, may have been the headliner just because of his calling his shot and leading the team the way he did with so little around him. And so for the Falcons to get here and beat two teams that maybe to me, especially with the way they looked this season, weren't quite living up to the billing of the brand name, but were still brand names. We're still, you know, quarterbacks and teams that people trusted. So for Atlanta to go through that road to get here, I think that already legitimized Matt Ryan in a way that few other things had before. But you're right, getting an add to a ring to it now would be monstrous for Matt Ryan and his career going forward here.
We're talking with Mike Golic Jr. You can hear him every Sunday morning here on the Ticket, ESPN Radio, 7 to 9 a.m. for a weekend observations. Joining us here on the Extravaganza, Jim Kuchlin hanging out with you. We're talking some Super Bowl things. On the flip side, well, what more could be said about the New England Patriots and everything that they do? I mean, you start with Brady and the whole Deflategate suspension. He seems to be playing for something more, as if to stick it to everybody who was against him almost. And the Patriots, yet here they are again, churning in, year out, quality talent, quality football, and making it to these, you know, far stretches. And the way the NFL has worked over the decades, Mike, and I'm sure you're somewhat familiar with this, there seems to be a team for every decade, like Steelers in the 70s, Niners in the 80s, and on and on and on. Yet, in a way, this may be, even though it's not all crunched in together in a smaller block of time, let's face it, the Patriots have been legit Super Bowl contenders every season since 2001. You could almost make the argument this is the longest running dynasty in NFL history, even though, again, all the Super Bowl wins, for example, aren't crunched up together. How do they keep doing this?
You've got your flagpole planted in three very clear places. When you've got your quarterback sewn up for that entire period, your head coach and your owner, you'd say you can lump this in with just front office in Bob Kraft. When you've got those three known commodities there, solidified, taken care of, and understood that they're going to be the centerpieces you build around, it's easy to rotate all the rest of the parts for them. And for them, you've got the advantage of a quarterback that's always, for some reason, been willing to take less money and give you room to work in a lot of those places, and a belief in the way that you do business and that unique ability to set the culture for that team to where people understand when you come here, you're going to act a certain way. You're going to conduct yourself a certain way. You're going to prepare a certain way to where you may not be, especially if you're a guy who's accustomed to being a star, you may not be, with very few exceptions. I mean, maybe Randy Moss, who was able to affect the game in such a unique way when he was there, but you're going to fall into a role. They're going to use you when your matchup is called, when your number benefits them the most, and you're going to be ready in that way. I mean, they trade away known talent a lot of times. This year on defense, You trade away Chandler Jones before the season. You trade away Jamie Collins during the season, dumping talent in a way that few teams would in an NFL where we know talent always wins, and yet we look at those moves and say, well, it's the Patriots. They'll know some way to make the best out of this, and they're doing it because they must know something more than the rest of us. So it's a remarkable machine they've built right there, and one that, again, as long as you've got those pieces, and now Tom Brady at 39 years old starts to become the one. You wonder if the Patriots, a long history of getting rid of even their marquee players before they get to that over-the-hill point, will Tom Brady ever fall victim to that as well?
Who has the defensive advantage in this game? I was looking over some numbers the other day. The Falcons overall on defense, not that great statistically. The Patriots are a little bit better, but these are obviously, as we mentioned, Mike, two big-time offenses, especially in the case of the Falcons. Who has the advantage defensively here?
I think on paper, you'd certainly have to give it to New England, the number one scoring defense coming into this game. And we know that there's a strong tie between having that number one scoring defense in the Super Bowl setting and coming away with the win. That being said, they also didn't face a quarterback in the top 10 of passer rating this season. All of these different things that let you know, okay, it's a very good defense, but it's not as great as that number might indicate. And so Matt Patricia is a hell of a defensive mind. I think he's done a great job of taking a lot of really veteran pieces who understand that maybe they're not the most dynamic individually. Maybe you don't have one guy that's going to win for you on his own consistently, but they're going to scheme you up the right way. They're going to be in great position. They've got a guy in Malcolm Butler on the back end who maybe is more of the playmaker since his Super Bowl coming out party there. But that's not to say Atlanta, who, listen, is young on defense certainly and has given up a bunch of yards this year, but they showed in that game against the Packers, they're fast, they're athletic, and if nothing else, they're going to play like their hair's on fire and try and harass the quarterback. And for them to be able to affect Aaron Rodgers, a much more mobile quarterback, a guy who lived on making big plays and extending them and affect him in the pocket the way they did, I wouldn't say that necessarily bodes overly well for Tom Brady, who's much more of a statue back there.
One more question before we let you go. Thanks so much for the time. By the way, we're talking with Mike Golic Jr. You can hear him every Sunday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. right here on The Ticket. Weekend Observations is the name of the show. Who's your X factor for this Super Bowl?
God, X factor for this Super Bowl, to me, I think it's going to be for the Falcons. I think it's going to have to be Vic Beasley and I guess you could say to a lesser extent those young defensive pieces that you talked about there. If Atlanta wants to make this happen, you've got to cut off the head of the snake. They've got to be able to consistently harass Tom Brady. That was the Patriots' undoing last season before they got their old offensive line coach back and were able to stabilize some things there. But if the Falcons are able to do what they did to Aaron Rodgers in their NFC championship game to Tom Brady, that's going to be the way they win this game. And so for that reason, I would say it's that group. That's the one they're going to have to lean on.
Mike, we appreciate the time. Appreciate the insight. Thanks so much for taking the time today. And enjoy the ride over the course of the week and on Sunday's game. And hopefully maybe we catch up with you sometime down the line.
Absolutely. Happy to come back anytime.
That is Mike Golic Jr. Joining us Sunday 7 to 9 right here on The Ticket, part of Weekend Observations you can catch right here on The Ticket. Hey, that's going to do it for this edition of The Extravaganza. Stick around, though. Mike Miller on Drive Time's coming at you right after this.